Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Welcome to the Now Hear This, Canby podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Martina Baker, and this is what's happening this week in our community. Nearly 1 month after the polls closed in the May 17th primary election, and on the day of the deadline for all counties to certify their results, the office of embattled Clackamas County Clerk Sherry Hall reported that all ballots have been counted. The county experienced unprecedented delays in tallying and reporting primary results due to a ballot printing error and Hall's admitted failures to adequately prepare for it. Fewer than 10% of the ballots returned by Clackamas County voters had been tallied on election night, the vast majority of them from Republicans, leaving the results of several major Democratic and nonpartisan local races in doubt for weeks. Secretary of State Shemaiah Fagan held press conferences and unleashed several severe statements about Clackamas County's election nightmare, repeatedly calling the situation and some of Hall's behavior outrageous. She has faced statewide and even national criticism for not accepting help earlier and refusing to take responsibility for the crisis, and media voices as diverse as the Oregonian and Lars Larson joined in calling for the longtime clerk to step down. Because the printing error rendered tens of thousands of ballots unreadable by the county's machines, each one had to be painstakingly hand-duplicated onto a clean ballot. Hundreds of temporarily displaced workers from other offices and counties spent several weeks on the grueling task, working in pairs of officials from different political parties to ensure fairness and accuracy. In her statement Monday, Hall said the duplication and ballot counting followed all state requirements and thanked the County Board of Commissioners and County Administrator Gary Schmidt for their support. I also want to extend my gratitude to the hundreds of county employees who worked many hours, my own staff and usual election staff who worked countless hours, she said. We're very pleased to have completed the count on time and to certify the election on the deadline date as set by state law. As in every election, we will review and evaluate our processes and procedures as an ongoing commitment to preserve election integrity and security. Fagan last week ordered an in-depth audit of Clackamas County's primary election results, one that goes beyond the standard post-election checking required of all counties to ensure results were tallied correctly. Construction work on the Grant Street Arch and downtown Canby Quiet Zone project is nearly complete, the city reported recently, although work has been delayed due to the weather. City Administrator Scott Archer provided an update to Mayor Brian Hodson and the Canby City Council during a meeting last month. Funded by urban renewal dollars, the Quiet Zone project involves installing new safety mechanisms and other upgrades to the railroad crossings at Elm, Grant, and Ivy Streets that would make it so train engineers are no longer required to sound their horns at each intersection. They may still sound the horn in emergency situations or to comply with other federal rules. The Quiet Zone will be completed once the final safety striping and appropriate approvals from the railroad and ODOT are in place. The safety striping started May 25th and was planned to continue depending on the weather. The arch is also receiving its finishing touches, including the installation of the banner pulley system, which will allow for the display of banners showcasing citywide events and community happenings. The arch, which was also Urban Renewal funded, is uplit by LED lights on both of the pillars that anchor the archway. The lighting displays can be changed throughout the year to highlight events, holidays, or even the Canby High School colors. The City of Canby is currently accepting recommendations from community members for a time capsule that is proposed to be installed in the northwest pillar of the Grant Street Arch. The city will host a grand opening event once construction is complete and the quiet zone approvals are fully in place. While the date of the event has not yet been set, the dedication is expected to be sometime this summer. The Clackamas County Fairgrounds and Event Center may be well over 100 years old, but its historic buildings and barns are outfitted with the latest in fiber optic technology and wireless internet capabilities, thanks to DirectLink. Strategic Account Manager Levi Mansell explains that the Fairgrounds team first approached DirectLink several years ago to explore ways to improve the event center's wireless capabilities for staff, vendors, and the general public at large events. Enhancing our Wi-Fi allows us to better serve our patrons and vendors, those who accept credit cards, with a more robust and reliable network concentrated in the busiest portions of our fairgrounds, Fair Director Brian Crow explained. That's critical for business operations these days, and it's a convenience for people. While DirectLink and its contract partners have well over a decade of experience laying fiber optic cable and connecting thousands of members to high-speed broadband across its 100-square-mile service area surrounding Canby and Mount Angel, it's fair to say the historic fairgrounds property presented some unique challenges. Its grounds were first laid out more than a century ago, and many of its buildings and barns date back to around that time. Some of them weren't originally designed to accommodate phone lines or electricity, let alone high-tech fiber-optic telecommunications cables. It was a pretty big challenge, Mansell admitted. With the fairgrounds, you're dealing with such a rich history there. This isn't your run-of-the-mill deal where you run down to the electronics store and grab a couple of extra Wi-Fi access points. As with everything during COVID-19, the pandemic revealed new and greater needs for wireless and broadband technology to help ensure the fairgrounds could best serve the community. When the Clackamas County Fair and Canby Rodeo were confirmed for 2021, the request came in from the Cowboy Channel to live broadcast each night of the rodeo. The capability to stream Ultra HD 4K and HK video in real time was certainly not something the rodeo arena's original builders would have been contemplating in the early 1950s. But again, DirectLink was up to the challenge. We tested it out, and with a little bit of tweaking, we were up and running, Mansell recalled. They had sellout crowds most nights and were able to broadcast to homes around the world from right here in Canby. Mansell also credits the technology itself with helping ensure DirectLink and its members stay ahead of the curve on the ever-increasing data needs of today's interconnected world. If it weren't for our fiber infrastructure, we wouldn't be able to support tens of thousands of users, he said. Every little bit helps when you're talking about that level of demand. You have to be extremely thoughtful and strategic. Crow praised Mansell and the DirectLink team for respecting the fairground's historical significance and rich legacy while helping lay the groundwork for new growth and opportunities. It is kind of this cool juxtaposition of history meets the present as well as the future, Crow said. But that's really where we're at right now, positioning ourselves to be able to meet the demand for major events now and well into the future, and that means connectivity. The project is continuing, with Mansell estimating that DirectLink is more than 3/4 of the way finished with laying fiber and installing access points across the fairgrounds property. The company is also working with Crow and other large events that are coming to the fairgrounds this summer, like Hairfest, to ensure that their needs are met. Thank you. The century-old Canby High School campus took the next major step in its evolution this week, breaking ground on a new science and general education wing, which will replace the so-called 200 wing on the school's south side. The project, including design, demolition, and new construction, was the biggest ticket item out of the new 20-year, $75 million capital construction bond Canby School District voters approved in May of 2020. In brief remarks before the June 8th groundbreaking at CHS, School Board Vice Chair Tom Scott noted how exceptional it was for voters to okay the massive investment in the city's schools, just a few months into the COVID-19 pandemic and the economic uncertainty that it wrought. We went out for a vote in May of 2020, and if you guys remember, May of 2020 was a time of a lot of uncertainty, Scott said. For our community to step up for a bond under those circumstances was really an incredible thing. We have an incredible supportive community. They love our kids and they love to support them. So most of all, thank you to our community members. Canby High School Principal Greg Densa agreed. This community continues to support Canby High School and the Canby School District, and it's really evident in the 2020 bond, Densa said. This was a huge commitment that the community made, and they made that commitment because they value the work that we're doing. With an estimated price tag of $35 million, the 50,000 square foot wing is the largest and most expensive project in the district's bond package. It will feature upgraded science labs, meeting rooms, shared learning spaces, and common areas. The wing will be the latest addition to the high school, originally built in the 1920s on land donated by New Era farmer George Henry Brown, the Potato King of Clackamas County. The new wing, along with the other projects associated with the bond, are the culmination of several years of work and preparation, including a needs assessment of all district facilities and a citizen involvement campaign prior to 2020. Construction on the new wing is expected to span 1 year, with the facility opening to students in the fall of 2023.
It's back! That's right, Canby's signature Independence Day celebration, one of the North Willamette Valley's most popular and exciting community events, returns this summer in all of its glory. Sponsored by the City of Canby, the community's beloved annual July 4th blast includes the one-of-a-kind parade through downtown Canby, local street fair featuring dozens of local food vendors and artisans, arcade truck and kids zone, sprawling classic car show, Canby Fire-hosted obstacle course, and live entertainment from both the iconic Waite Park gazebo stage and family-friendly beer garden on 2nd Avenue. Afterward, grab your blankets and camp chairs and head to Waite Park for the incredible community fireworks show by Canby Fire and Western Display Fireworks, starting at dusk at Trost Elementary and Baker Prairie Middle School. This is the community extravaganza 3 years in the making, the one you've all been waiting for, bigger and better than ever. 10 a.m. Monday, July 4th, only in downtown Canby. For times, parade route, and other information, or to get involved, visit canbyindependenceday.com. Hey Tyler, read any good books lately?
Yeah, actually I'm reading a really good one right now.
Awesome, what's it about?
It's kind of complicated, but there's like these two kids with an absent parent, and then this mysterious stranger shows up with his sinister accomplices, and they just start wreaking havoc in their lives. I think it's like a Faustian metaphor.
Wow, that sounds really dense.
It is.
Interesting though, who wrote it?
You know, I think it's like a doctor, starts with like an S or something, Sass, Sos.
Tyler, are you reading The Cat in the Hat?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to. It's taken me like 2 months to get this far.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever your interest or reading level, open the world of all things books at the Book Nook in downtown Canby.
Yeah, guys, this local, independently owned and operated store is your one-stop shop for the latest releases and great deals on a huge variety of previously owned books, as well as games, art, and writing supplies and gifts.
They also do book clubs and game nights if you're looking for some fun, healthy activities right here in Canby. And hey, you know, for you, Tyler, they have a really expansive selection of children's books.
Oh, cool. Anyway, check them out on Facebook and Instagram, online at booknookcanby.com, or stop by 294 Northwest 2nd Avenue and let their friendly staff introduce you to your new favorite read.
Hey, Frankie, why do you think I'd be interested in children's books?
We'll talk about it later.
Oh, okay.
On the Canby Conversation today, we are so excited to be talking with, maybe for the last time, a short timer here, Greg Denza, a retiring Canby High School principal. Hi, Greg. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
How are you?
I'm good.
The school year is over. How does it work with you? Are you still here for a few more weeks or months? Or
yeah, my contract technically ends on June 30th.
Okay.
So I'm here for that duration, and then I fully expect that I'll be doing some type of either formal or informal work with the new principal, Carrie Sloan, as she transitions into the new year.
Yeah, yeah, very excited for her. She's stepping in. She's going to be really great in the role, I think. She's been here for a few years, I think.
Yes, this is Carrie's fifth year.
Okay, yeah, cool. I want to talk, obviously, a lot about your time here at Canby High, but just for folks who don't know, you've had a very interesting work career, and unlike probably a lot of folks who wind up being principals, did not spend your entire career in education or in school administration, kind of came at it in a different direction.
Yeah.
Was your first out of college serving in the Marines?
Yeah. I went through college at UC Berkeley through the Navy ROTC program. So I was commissioned as a second lieutenant when I first came out of the college.
Were you an athlete in college?
No, I was not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But went into the Marines.
Yep. Went straight into the Marine Corps and served a little over 4 years on active duty.
Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan?
No. This was the Cold War time period. So that would have been the mid-80s.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went from the Marine Corps into the FBI.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of was your reasoning for serving?
In the Marine Corps?
Yes.
Specifically? You know, to be totally upfront and honest, I wasn't at the time ultra patriotic.
Okay.
I was interested in serving. I've always been service-minded, but for me, it was really a lot deeper. My father had wanted to join the Marine Corps, and he couldn't because of a physical ailment. Mm-hmm. So I was raised with this I don't know how you would say it, this disappointment my father had and his admiration for the organization. And it's like, well, that's something I'd like to do and try and kind of prove myself.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Marines in particular tends to be a branch that attracts some of those kind of, I guess, more physically minded individuals, men and women, who are kind of interested in proving themselves in a physical way that, you know, kind of seeing what they're made of as far as that goes. So, and you were in for four years of active duty, but in the Marines for a long time.
Yeah. I stayed involved in the reserve.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I left active duty, they automatically put me in the reserve and I had to serve out a contract.
Yeah.
And, after I left the FBI, I got back involved in the reserves more actively, starting off when I was in graduate school, getting involved with a unit down in Salem, Oregon. And then that just kind of took me into a reserve career where I spent a lot of time both on active and reserve service.
What kept you in it? Did you find some patriotism that you didn't initially think you had?
The patriotism was there, Tyler. But no, I think the biggest thing, and you've probably found this common in talking to a lot of veterans, is that you really develop some camaraderie. with the men and women you serve with. And it's unlike anything that you will experience in the civilian world.
Yeah.
And frankly, I missed that.
Yeah.
And I found that the reserve was a really nice combination for me to continue to serve my country, continue to have that camaraderie, that esprit de corps. But it wasn't, 24-hour a day, 365 day a year type of a job.
Yeah.
I was able to balance family and some other pursuits that I had at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I and some listeners and folks who know me know this. I work with veterans in my other job, and early on, something I learned, our director of Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs at the time was a Marine, and almost got fired by using the term ex-Marine. Very early on, that you Marine veterans do not like that term, because once a Marine, always a Marine.
So, correct.
One term you guys do like is proud Marine, even though I've never met any other kind. So, but apparently that's not redundant to you guys, but. Went into the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was that like in California?
Yeah, it was in California. So I left active duty Marine Corps. I wanted to continue my work. I was doing a lot of work in intelligence. Mm-hmm. And I had just gotten married, and I wasn't too excited about serving overseas, although I was looking at other intelligence agencies that had a lot of overseas postings.
FBI is more domestic.
And I was excited about doing counterintelligence and counterterrorism work, and that's what I ended up doing in Los Angeles Division.
Was it dangerous? Was it I mean, were you Jack Bauer chasing people down?
No. It's so funny because kids always ask that question too, right? There's a lot of surveillance work, there's a lot of investigative work that involves going through records, a lot of judicial work to make sure, you have the warrants that you need to do the work that you need to do. So there's really a lot of paperwork, a lot of administration to it. And that was punctuated with doing surveillances and occasional arrests and everything like that. So maybe it was a balance between kind of boring routine paperwork and some pretty exciting law enforcement work.
You were a field agent, right?
Yes, I was. Yeah. I was. And I would say probably the most dangerous and exciting parts of the job were doing surveillances in rough parts of Los Angeles, and being accosted by people and things like that. There's just kind of a lot of routine work in the, that type of stuff.
Yeah. So how in the world field agent and counterintelligence for the FBI to education and high school administration?
So my wife at the time, my ex-wife, we were married. She had just completed law school and was offered a job here in Portland. Mm-hmm. I asked the FBI for a transfer, but that went against their transfer policy. So granted, this was the late 80s, early 90s. There's a lot of nuances that have been put in place now to make the FBI a lot more family friendly. But it still is, I would say, still a little bit under the shadow of J. Edgar Hoover.
Yeah.
And the attitude was, well, if your wife wants to be with you, she should have a job in Los Angeles, And it's like, well, we didn't really want to raise a family in L.A.
Yeah.
And I said, fine, okay. I've enjoyed my service, and both my parents were teachers involved in education. I had a passion for studying history. So it's like, I'll go back to graduate school and become a history teacher.
Yeah.
And that's the path that it took me on.
Yeah. Yeah. You were in Portland for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then came to Canby to become principal, right?
Right. Yeah. The educational path was, after I finished my graduate work, I worked for 11 years. In Beaverton Schools, social studies teacher, both middle school and the high school level. Then I took a position at Tualatin High School as vice principal. I did that for 11 years.
Yeah.
And then came over here to Canby as principal.
Yeah, yeah. Stepping into a high school classroom as a teacher, having been a field agent for the FBI, mm-hmm. What was that like? Did that feel, and I'm jokingly asking, did it feel easier or harder?
The demands are so different.
Yes.
It's such different type of work.
Yes.
I've always seen myself as a bit of a teacher.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, service oriented.
Yeah.
So it was really kind of changing my focus. You know, law enforcement work, it's really reactive, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, somebody breaks a law, you arrest them, you go through the criminal process with them.
Yeah.
And I really looked at getting into teaching to be a little bit more proactive,
yeah.
And helping kids out and guiding them to make the right decisions and learn and be prepared for their future. So different type of work. Not a lot of relation to the FBI, but there was a lot of connections with, you know, being a young Marine officer and working with young Marines and teaching
sure.
them as well. So,
sure. yeah.
You know, not a big stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Given the two, I'd have to think about it, of which one I'd be more scared to step into.
Yeah.
So it's a mean streets of L.A. or a high school classroom.
Yeah.
Are there obviously, you know, we've talked about it now, folks who maybe didn't know your path to education and administration was a little more unusual than others. Do you feel that there were certain things, and you started to kind of talk about that a little bit, but certain things that you had learned in your previous careers and previous work with service
mm-hmm.
that maybe prepared you in different ways or sort of caused you to approach education in different ways than maybe someone with a more traditional path?
Yeah, I would say there's two really big lessons that I took primarily from my time in the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
And one of them was as a young platoon commander, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and I had a unique experience, of course, growing up there in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Very interesting and fun place to be.
Sure.
And it gave me kind of a perspective to be very open to different cultures. And then I get into the Marine Corps, and I'm serving with Marines that are from really all over the world.
I mean,
primarily from the United States, but we had foreign Marines serving with us as well.
Yeah.
And you learn very quickly that there's quite a bit of cultural diversity in this country.
Yeah.
I think about the first platoon I commanded, you know, we had farm boys from Arkansas. I had a former gangbanger from Los Angeles. There were Puerto Rican immigrants from New York City.
Wow.
You know, so you had this whole spectrum
yeah.
of people
yeah.
that you're serving with. And here I am, you know, the kid from California who's got to make 40 Marines work together and accomplish a mission
yeah.
in a foreign country under,
yeah.
you know, pretty diverse conditions. So it gave me a real appreciation for the rich diversity of this country and learning how to work with different people.
Yeah.
You know, and recognizing their unique experiences and how they bring that to the way they interact with you.
Yeah.
I think that was the first big lesson. The second big lesson I really took out of my war experience in Iraq. Before I fought in that war, I put a lot more emphasis on little things that didn't need a lot of emphasis. And I say that a lot to our staff here. You know, when you go through a war experience and you're seeing death on a regular basis and destruction,
yeah.
You learn to really prioritize things.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes I can be a little bit flip, but when people are worked up about some situation here in this educational institution, I frequently say, you know, well, it's not 120 degrees and no one's shooting at us right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I don't see any blood. We'll get through this just fine.
Yeah.
So
gives you some perspective.
Yeah, it gave me a lot of perspective.
Yeah.
And I attribute that a lot to keeping me pretty calm in crisis situations.
Yeah.
And you know, you've followed my career over the last 7 years, you know, whether it's COVID or the multiple student suicides or things like that. There have been a number of things that have impacted the high school
yeah.
pretty heavily.
Yeah.
And I like to think that I'm the kind of leader who's kind of kept everything in an even keel and allowed us to navigate those things without a lot of emotional response.
Yeah, yeah.
Or let's say inappropriate emotional response.
Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha. Yeah, I hear you. You know, you say that it was pretty close to 120 degrees last year.
Yeah,
around
it was.
This time.
It was. It's like, yeah, that's fine.
No shooting, fortunately.
Just drink a lot of water.
Yes. is it funny to, you know, that those differences are kind of obvious looking at a Marine unit or any type of military unit derived from all different constituencies around the country, but to walk into a classroom, even here in Camden, a small town where mm-hmm. everyone pretty much comes from the same place, but you still can see very different
right.
cultural perspective, very different, you know, opinions and things on different things. So especially when you're talking about history and some of the mm-hmm. stuff you've done in your career.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody brings a certain level of value.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of times it's so fascinating because a lot of times the differences are somewhat transparent. Mm-hmm. We don't see them, you know, it's easy to look at something like race or gender,
yeah.
right? But a lot of times you'll look at a group of kids, they'll look pretty much the same, but they all have a different story.
Yeah.
And there's value to that story.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, you know, there have been, particularly I feel the last couple years, you know, it's been a challenging time for, mm-hmm. for educators and administrators.
Yes.
Trying to toe the different lines, trying to keep folks happy that are just, you know, at times only going to be happy if they get it exactly this way. And then on the other side, it's people feel the same way, but there's no overlap, mm-hmm. you know. How do you, and you know, feel free to pretend that you got it 100% right every time. How do you kind of keep that, I guess, keep morale up or just kind of keep going when you are just tired and feeling like things are kind of set up for you to fail, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's an interesting and a very laden question,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I
was going to start with that one, but
yeah, there you go. There you go.
Time.
Yeah, let's start with something light. For me, as a leader,
yeah,
I, you know, there's different ways I look at it. Of course, I mean, there's the personal way I look at things and how I interject. But I've got to. My job is to lead this school. You
yeah.
know, 120 staff members, 1,400 kids.
Yeah,
you know, it's a challenge and. For me, the best thing that I have found as a strategy is to really highlight the positive things that we do that may not be really apparent.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much that we do on a day-to-day basis that is really can be remarkable.
Yeah.
How we interact with kids, how we, you know, respond to parents, how we make partnerships within the community.
Yeah.
And they almost become routine.
Yeah.
And we just kind of go through a school year, kids learn, they get their grades,
yeah.
we get to graduation, and it's done.
Yeah.
But each one of those can be unique and challenging. And then you overlay something like the COVID closure on it, and that put a kind of a dark shadow over our whole society where we really, people started focusing on the negativity
yeah.
and everything was bad. You know, the teacher who didn't call you back within 12 hours,
yeah.
you know, now you're getting really angry because this closure puts so much stress on us all individually.
Yeah.
And then that person starts chipping at us and then complaining about how bad this teacher is. And it's like, well, let's all just slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Again, kind of going back to that Iraq thing, you know,
yeah.
it's not that bad. Let's look at all the positive things that happened. And so that's been a large part of my job is whether dealing with the community or dealing with our staff or the kids. It's like, okay, let's recognize the challenges that we're having, but let's also take a look at our accomplishments and really build on that energy.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to have more of an open mindset.
Yeah. One thing that I've always admired about you, Greg, as a leader and just as a person, but as an asset that I think is really valuable in the role that you've held this past 7 years at Camby High School. But I feel like there's a certain authenticity to you, a certain kind of just being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's from your military service or your background, your somewhat unorthodox background coming
yeah.
into education. But I feel, I guess I'll ask you if you agree that that's a value or a skill that you have and that it's something that I think is really good for working with teens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I would hope that I'm that way.
Yeah.
You know, you really don't. I mean, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally authentic. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I haven't always been authentic.
If you're trying, you're failing, right?
Right.
It's got to be real.
Yeah. I mean, there's a real challenge, especially as a principal. There's a certain amount of politics that you have to play.
Right.
You know, and you have to. You have to carry the flag forward. I mean, you know, great example again, like this COVID thing, you know, the governor's got certain rules and I've got to, you know, implement those rules. And I don't necessarily agree with them, but I've got to do it. And I've got to do it in a positive way that gets our whole greater community on board with that.
It's interesting because, you know, with our district, we've got, what, 5-ish elementary schools. Mm-hmm. 91's kind of a dual. We've got the one large middle school. You're one of like 7 or 8 principals, but you're
the high school.
It's a different tier. Yeah. A different amount of scrutiny, a different amount of.
Yeah, absolutely. And but yeah, I think that authenticity part is something that we always, not just me, I encourage our whole staff to be authentic.
Yeah.
You know,
again, with teens, because they're at this place where they're kind of becoming who they're going to be, and there's so much pressure and so much, you know, relational stuff going on, hormones and all this stuff. And I feel like that's just something that is important.
Absolutely.
And
that's something I really, I mean, I'm glad you touched on that, Tyler, because I think that's a lot of the feedback I get from kids is that they really appreciate that I am an authentic person and I am approachable. We can all think back to when we were in high school, and most people look at administrators, especially principals, as these authority figures that intimidating, scary, you know, and it's like, no, that's the, as a principal, I can't encourage kids to get engaged and involved in school if I'm scaring them to death, right? And I think the days of that authoritarian type of leader are gone.
Yeah.
You know, kids need... They still need structure.
Yeah.
They still need an authoritative presence.
Yeah.
They want boundaries. But if you can deliver that in a way that's compassionate and caring, you know, they recognize that. When I mentor young teachers and young administrators, I really encourage them to be authentic. And it's funny because to me, kids see through the masks and facades that we put up as adults.
Oh, yeah.
That's a skill set we develop later in life where a lot of us don't authentically engage with each other.
Yeah.
And then we come into a school setting and we try to use our position of authority to create this facade.
Right.
And kids see through that stuff.
Yeah.
And the, you know, that's, so I tell a lot of these,
which is ironic because they're doing it, right?
They're learning it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, they have their different roles and different things that they're playing. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they can smell it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you,
maybe that's why they can see it.
Yeah. And that's why I say the best teachers out there, the best staff members that we have, do that authentic engagement with kids.
Yeah.
And it's transparent. You know how they are, you know? And if they're having a bad day, they tell you they're having a bad day, you know? And they want to know, when they say, how are you? It's not just a salutation. Yeah. It's an actual concern. Question. Yeah.
Yeah.
Frankie! How many times do I have to ask you for those audio files? I need them for the next episode.
I know. Man, I told you I'm trying to upload them now, but it's taking forever.
That's super weird. I thought your new internet provider was like super fast speeds.
Well, I thought so too. I mean, sometimes it goes really fast, but then I get heavy lag and glitches when I'm trying to make FaceTime calls or play games. It has cost me quite a few missions on Call of Duty Warzone, I can tell you. Even the videos on my doorbell cam come in jittery sometimes.
Well, Frankie, other than being very bad at video games, sounds like it's trouble with your upload speeds. Most internet providers only talk about their download speeds, since those are usually way faster.
Okay, hang on a second. You're telling me there are two types of internet speeds?
Yep. And upload speed is just as important as download. Think about how much stuff we send up to the internet, like the video of you that your friends see on a FaceTime call, or the response to your commands when you're playing action video games.
You're right. It sounds like I have slow upload speeds. Wish I would have known that when I signed up for internet.
Unfortunately, a lot of providers only tout their download speeds when talking about their services. That's what sets DirectLink apart. Not only do they openly advertise them, but their upload speeds are up to 10 times faster than other providers in the area. They know how important it is to have clear video when on that Zoom interview you have for your dream job, or when you're trying to catch those porch pirates that are stealing all of your Amazon packages and the Christmas things that you got for your, you know what? It's not a big deal. Give DirectLink a call to get started at 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop/internet.
You kind of got a grudge against those.
I'm porch still pirates. Waiting for my teddy bear to show up.
I'm Roz Mason, running for Oregon Senate District 26. I am committed to funding and supporting our police. I'm a licensed armed security officer in the state of Oregon and an active member of a police chaplain association. In the Mount Hood District, we know our communities require safety provided by the police. Law enforcement officers respond to many types of calls. Across the nation, police departments are adding cutting-edge programs that diversify 911 response, sending specially trained teams to mental health or addiction crises when needed. Security is an essential function of our government. Send me to Salem, and I will work to ensure our communities benefit from the most effective safety responses, which also keep our law enforcement officers safer. Paid for by Mason for Oregon, 21968.
I want to ask you about a moment. So, graduation this past one, you spoke as you always do, did your selfie and all this stuff like you always do. But kind of, we're talking about this class and everything that they had gone through, because, you know, obviously every year of COVID, there was a senior class that experienced, you know, different parts of things. You know, the first class had no graduation, you know, 2021.
Only some video graduation.
No in-person graduation. Thank you. Yes. No, that's correct. Sorry, I should have known that.
We tried to make it special.
That would be a touch point. Anyway, this class experienced all of it, you know? It was just kind of remarkable as an observer to sort of you're retiring, you know, it sort of felt like, and maybe this is weird to say, or maybe you thought of it similar, but like, you know, almost like a movie, almost like a, this is the conclusion of your story, right? Yeah. And the conclusion of this class's story. I'm just curious, you know, kind of what was going through your head, what that sort of felt like, speaking to the class of 2022 at graduation after, you know, a mostly normal graduation ceremony after everything that you guys had been through.
You know, I always want my comments to be specific to that class and meaningful. And I hope they were. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, Tyler. They went through all of it.
Yeah.
And they really experienced a lot of loss and disappointment.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, they also recovered from it and exceptionally well. I mean, if you see how they've just been looking in athletics and activities, it's like, wow, what a resilient group of kids.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted my comments to reflect. For me personally, it's funny. I haven't felt that emotional surge yet, and maybe I've just kind of clammed up about it. And that's how I cope with things, you know. And I think too, again, my military background, you get so used to, you know, building these relationships and then knowing it's going to end on this date, and then you're moving on, right? And that's kind of how I have approached it. It's like, okay, kids, you're moving on. I'm moving on. Let's do this. Let's do it with a smile on our face. I'm struggling, honestly, I'm struggling a little bit with saying goodbye to the staff. I think we've really changed the culture here at the high school over my tenure.
Yeah.
And I think Carrie's going to do a great job carrying that on and all the changes that we've done to try to make Canby High School more inclusive, more accessible. Develop some really strong relationships with the staff. And they continue to meet the expectations and exceed them. You know, when when we hit COVID, what a great test, right? Yeah. We're going to change how we do everything.
Yeah.
And I need you guys to do it in a positive way and power through it. And, yeah. You know, while I know your listeners are probably thinking, well, it didn't really work out well for me. Right. You know, it's like, granted, it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
But when I look at how our staff performed as compared to a lot of neighboring high schools, the staff performed, I thought, exceptionally well, and our community responded well
yeah.
to that. And to a point where we got through it, none of us liked it,
yeah.
but it's like, okay, we did it. We yeah. succeeded in that regard. And, you know, we yeah. haven't had the protests at this high school. We haven't had parents forcing their way in.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't had, you know, demands for teachers and administrators to be fired. And I take that as a mark of our community's appreciation for the work that we did.
Yeah. I remember comments from that end of the 2019-2020 school year, and you know, everything was going virtual. There was drive-through stuff that you guys were doing. It was incredible to watch, I thought. But then I remember comments as well from, you know, there was people complaining, why can't we do this? Why can't we do this? You know, like you say, no one loved what had to happen. But I remember a number of comments where folks were like, you know, my kid goes to school in Beaverton or whatever, maybe I should say names, but goes in and, you know, I wish we had this. You know, mm-hmm. they're not doing anything. So that effort was seen, I think, yeah. by, and, you know, by parents even in other districts. Have you... you know, since obviously your retirement was announced, Carrie was announced as new principal, have there been, you know, times where you've tried to sort of pass things along to her or, you know, more intentionally or kind of allowing space for her to be her own type of leader?
Well, both.
Yeah.
Both. You know, it's interesting when that decision is made, almost immediately, the torch is being passed.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm not quite ready to let go of it. You know,
doing my selfie thing, Carrie. Like.
I know. It was interesting.
Still doing the bagpipe thing.
Well, I don't think I could get out of the bagpipe thing okay. as much as I might want to. But the it's really interesting. I remember years ago I was working for a principal who retired. And he had a real hard time letting go. And maybe that has shaped how I've approached this. And it got to the point where as a vice principal working for him, I had to tell him to back down.
Yeah.
And I wasn't taking over for him, but he just couldn't let the new guy take over.
Yeah.
And it turned into a really kind of nasty situation. But I've since that, you know, and having that realization, there have been a few meetings where I've been in and people are starting to default to Carrie. And yeah. I want to interrupt them. It's like, you know what? I'm still the principal. But it's like, nope, I'm going to back off. You know, she needs to get that. It's my ego that's a little wrapped up yeah. here. So I think I hope, you know, you can go interview Carrie next. And she's like, oh, no, he won't let go. And,
yeah. You know, yeah. We'll get the other side of this.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. So, yeah. Elephant in the room. Where did the bagpipe thing come from? Tell me that story.
Oh, that's not much of an elephant, is it? My father was a piper.
Yeah.
And I grew up around the Scottish community and a little bit of the Irish community in San Francisco as a young kid, going to all these bagpipe concerts and marching in parades with my dad. And
yeah.
I have got a picture of me as a 4-year-old wearing a kilt.
Yeah.
And then I found out when I was doing some family history project, my mom's German, but I always assumed my dad was Scottish because yeah. he played the bagpipes and found out that he was Hungarian and Croatian. And it's like, wait, there's no Scottish in us? And he goes, no, I just like the sound of the instrument. So
yeah,
my dad started playing in the 50s.
Yeah.
And I just kind of grew up with it and in that culture. And I started playing when I got into adulthood. And, there we go.
yeah. But you've made it a big part of your identity. You do it at graduation. Do it on the first day of school. Yeah. Where did that come from?
Well, that's a funny story.
Yeah.
It at Tualatin High School, when I got there, people found I was really doing a lot more piping back then. I was heavily involved with Clan McClay Pipe Band in Portland.
Yeah.
We actually were doing some of our practices on the grounds at Tualatin. And the teacher suggested, it's like, well, wouldn't it be cool on the first day when we marched, they had a tradition of marching the kids in the main office through the main entrance. Wouldn't it be cool, because a lot of the teachers would bring instruments and play as they welcome the kids. You bring your bagpipes and play. And then that became marching the kids in.
Right.
And it was a tradition. I never piped the seniors, yeah. though. That was new to Canby. And when I made the transfer here to Canby, one of my seniors' mom is on our staff here.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, yeah, Mr. Denson always pipes the freshmen in. And I thought, well, I'll come to Canby. I can let that tradition die.
Yeah.
And I came here, and it's like everybody started hitting me up saying, well, I heard you're going to continue that tradition. I'm like, oh, I guess I am.
Yeah.
And then it just was natural a couple of years ago when the seniors were graduating. It's like, well, I'm going to pipe them out too.
How long did it take you to teach Carrie to do?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, I know. That's what a lot of kids are saying. When are you going to learn how to play the bagpipes? And sadly, Carrie has no musical talent whatsoever. Yeah. So I don't know.
It is interesting, and you probably know much more about this, having done it for so long and for being part of your family history. But there's more maybe cultural significance to the bagpipe maybe mm-hmm. than because it was. I guess a lot of instruments maybe initially were used in battle, but I think bagpipes sort of feel more like a guitar or whatnot that it has that role in lending momentousness to anything.
Bagpipes start playing, people take notice.
Something's going on. Important's going on. Any favorite kind of memories or moments that have been
here at Canby High School?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many memories, and it's like trying to pick one that sticks out is a little bit tough. What I always appreciate is when you, kind of going back to the authenticity, when you have a connection with a kid and the kid tells you you made a difference in their life.
Yeah.
That was much more common when I was a teacher.
Yeah.
And as I've become an administrator, you know, you separate a little bit more from the kids. But I still get that from kids. And I hear it from them. You've watched our graduation announcements. And when the kids make comments about you, you're just like, wow, I guess I have made a positive impact on these kids. So that's really positive. And I would say that's kind of the big thing that I take away from it.
Yeah.
One thing that jumped out of my mind of a great, great singular moment was winning our first football game after 27 losses, and seeing that happen, and the excitement that the kids had around that. And, and that's what high school is all about, right? It's a school spirit thing and feeling like you're part of a greater community.
Yeah.
There are just so many real positive things that have happened here, and I'm glad I'm a part of them. I've encouraged that.
Yeah. You can't say COVID. Anything that just really surprised you about, that you wouldn't have expected would have been something that you experienced or that was part of this job?
It surprised me before I came to Canby. I mean, I was at Tualatin, so we were in the same league.
Yeah.
And I was down here a lot. I was always impressed by how friendly the kids are here in this community. And it reflects the community as a whole.
Yeah.
And with that, generally how accepting the kids are of each other, even with all the diversity. Teachers will frequently ask me as I'm trying to recruit them to come work at, what's Canby like? And it's like, well, it's a community in transition. Yeah. There's some strong agrarian roots, but we're in the shadow of the Portland metro area and more and more being subsumed by the Portland metro area. And you see positive aspects of both.
Yeah.
So you'll walk down the hall here in Canby High School and you'll have a kid wearing his cowboy boots and his rodeo belt buckle next to
around the parking lot.
Yeah, next to a kid with multiple piercings and purple hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get along.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think continues to please me about this school, how friendly the kids are and positive community it is.
Yeah. My last question. I don't know if you've ever served in school districts that had this, maybe you have, but How important has it been to Canby that we do have the one high school, that it's all here? Because there are multiple, you know, the Beaverton, there's other communities that have multiple ones. And I've heard educators and kids who grew up there that feels different now that they've come to Canby and sort of see those differences play out in the community.
I think it's a great benefit.
Yeah, I know it's great for the athletics. But,
yeah. I mean, on a number of different levels, there's benefits.
Yeah.
One, there's a level of flexibility. You know, when I want to make a change at the high school about something and I vet it with my staff and, you know, whatever level it is of decision making and collaboration, I can go to the superintendent and say, hey, I want to make this change.
Yeah.
And it's a conversation with the superintendent,
yeah.
you know, maybe a few other ancillary people, but.
Yeah.
It's not a committee meeting. It's
yeah.
not, let's get the other high school over here. And then there's this give and
yeah.
take. I experienced a lot of that in Tiger Tualatin with
yeah.
those two schools.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of great flexibility. I think it's wonderful that you can have one high school representing one town.
Yeah.
You know, when our kids travel around the state, whether it's, you know, thespians going to Ashland or,
yeah.
you know, our baseball team playing in the state championship,
yeah.
you're representing the community.
Yeah.
And the state championship game was a great example of that.
Yeah.
We showed up there, one high school town,
yeah.
and you were there.
Yeah.
That was 2/3 to 3/4 Canby.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
crazy.
It was
like
crazy to watch. And it was volume, but it was also the Canby crowd was there like an hour early. They were
yeah.
there when the previous game was still going on and there was a game and then there was like a graduation ceremony
yeah.
that happened.
Yeah.
But Canby was there for all of it and the West Lynn season,
I know.
It was just the West Lynn team over there.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
And it was
like you guys
even,
have to be here.
It wasn't even full, you know? I mean, we were bleeding out
yeah.
and I think that's what's kind of neat about it, right? You know?
Yeah.
We're coming, you know, we don't go to the state
championship. I mean, it was like, again, elephant in the room. I keep using that, but I mean, it was a brutal game.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people stayed after for the kids.
Yeah,
they knew
absolutely.
That they were hurting.
Yeah.
And yeah, yeah.
You know, you look across the crowd, you
that
see
that was not just the parents,
right?
Waiting there. That was most of the people that were there.
No,
yeah.
I mean, you had. I'm just impressed because you look across the crowd and you're seeing Canby business owners.
Yeah.
Chief Tro was there.
Yeah.
You know, we've got most of the school
Doctor
board
Downs
was there.
There. Yeah,
yeah, we're all. You know, it was just. I thought amazing representation of Canby.
Yeah.
And that's what's neat about being in the one high school town.
Yeah.
This is Canby.
Yeah.
We represent the city to the whole state.
Yeah.
And we're incredibly well supported by the community.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure being the principal and people having the trust and confidence that I could lead the ship. And I think people have responded very positively to the changes that we've made. And
yeah.
moving forward, I just expect bigger and better things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I lied. I did have just one last question.
Oh,
what's next for you? Professional bagpipe.
No. No.
Professional bagpipe surfing.
Yeah, I don't know, really, to
yeah.
be honest. I think I'm going to be doing some consulting work supporting principals in Clackamas County.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some work there. Well, I know there's some work there that I'll
yeah.
be doing. But I'm going to kind of play it by ear and
yeah.
see where I really want to go. I don't have any expectations. I'm fortunately in a position where I don't need to have expectations.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'd like to do some work with veterans groups.
Cool.
Because I think I can bring a lot to the table with that experience, my experiences on that. And,
yeah.
You know, we'll just kind of see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Anything else to say here?
Well, just to build on what I alluded to earlier, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity and the honor to have been the principal here at Canby High School.
Yeah.
It's tough to get selected as a principal. It's tough to be a principal.
Yeah.
You have to make a lot of decisions. A lot of times you're not always the most popular guy.
Yeah.
But you take a look at the body of work that you do and you look back at it and say, well, did I do the right thing? And I said, I think I did. I think the community has felt, you know, that we've been moving in the right direction. And I keep saying, you know, that we couldn't do this work without the community's support.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm very thankful for that.
Is there anything, and maybe you maybe your ego hasn't required you to sort of think about this, but is there anything that you sort of feel like that you've left here, either physically or non-physically, but sort of a legacy that, you know, I know that that's going to be here.
Because of
Principal Denza.
Yeah. Well.
Is there a Greg Denza Hall or?
Yeah. No. Greg Denza Hall. The district. Remove my proposal for a statue. I was thinking bagpiping.
Riding the cougar, right?
Yeah, riding the cougar, leading the students on a bit. Yeah, that was value engineered out of the bond project.
Shoot.
I know. I'll say what I hope my legacy is a culture of acceptance of all kids, a culture of professional growth and improvement by our staff, and really a legacy of continuing to evolve and get better as we move forward. Because, there are a lot of things that are wonderful traditions and practices here at Canby High School. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of areas that we can still get better with.
Yeah.
But I think people are looking at that and just trying to improve and, provide the best for our kids as they move forward in whatever their futures might hold.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome. Well, Greg, I know you've got a lot going on this month and today you've been in it. So thank you for taking so much time to talk to us.
Tyler, thank you.
Congratulations. Wish you all the best in your bagpiping career.
Yeah, thank you.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or that baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Franke. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.